Good morning, everyone. All right, close your eyes, blink, now open them again. What do you see in the presidential portrait on this first full day of the Obama administration?
Hi, it's Larry in Manhattan, and I just want to say that let's celebrate the fact that we have not only an African-American president, but we have a biracial president, the perfection of what Obama represents, the bringing together of all people. Let's look forward to the acceptance of all of humanity, not simply black and white, but everyone, through his leadership.
Well, you can see a lot of humanity if you open that portrait to not only Barack Obama's face, but all of the people in his family. You've got Obama's Kenyan step-grandmother, Michelle Obama's great-grandfather, who was born into slavery, Obama's Indonesian-American half-sister, and a rabbi. Joining us to talk about the very new and interesting family portrait that now occupies the White House is New York Times reporter Jody Kantor, who has a French page story on the new first family, and she joins us from Washington. Jody, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
You know, it is interesting to even imagine what the walls of the White House look like today and how different they are from what's happened in the past. What do you think the narrative is here?
Well, it's just such a radical break with the portraits of first families past, overwhelmingly white, overwhelmingly Protestant, Catholics pass for exotic in the hall of that portrait gallery. And yet here you have the Obama family. At one point in the story, I just listed all the different languages they speak, and I won't bore you here with the list, but suffice it to say, we're not just talking French and Spanish here. We're talking, you know, African tribal languages. We're talking Gullah, which is the Creole language of the South Carolina Lowcountry. This is an amazingly diverse family that is multiracial, it's multi-religious, and their geographic span is incredible.
You know, the radicalism of the change, you're not suggesting that they need to do anything with the window treatments in the White House there in the short term, are you?
No, and, you know, the one thing to say about the radicalism is that, in a way, it's not very radical at all, because the country has always been amazingly diverse since the United States was founded, and yet that was never quite reflected in our ruling class to the extent that African Americans and Jews and Asian Americans made it into the leadership of this country. It was in judicial roles, in staff roles, in Congress, but we have never had the White House has been strangely impervious to the diversity of this country.
And that's an interesting point that you make in your article, and I just can't tell you how many emails and calls that I got from not only here in the U.S., but from my family in Nigeria and in Europe. I mean, as an African-American woman, there was such joy, and I was surprised by how much joy there was among the members of my family and my friends. And as an African-American woman who's also biracial, I've got a lot of those same mixes in my family. And there was this collective joy about seeing that portrait, about seeing that family at the White House as they were walking to watch the parade.
You know what's kind of funny is that this is not actually the first family to have some diversity in it, but it wasn't always handled well. Do you remember when the first President Bush raised some eyebrows when he referred to two of his grandchildren, who are Hispanic on one side? He referred to them as the little brown ones. and people just felt a little uncomfortable about that. And this is, you know, the Obamas take the opposite approach. They really celebrate, in a way, you could say that President Obama's entire political brand is built on this image, because Dreams for My Father is all about coming to terms with this multifaceted identity.
You know, looking yesterday at the television pictures, and again, the most compelling pictures were the shots when they were just walking together, either as the extended family or just to Michelle and Barack. It's a merging of this traditional American diversity with this sort of Camelot moment that is very much associated with aristocracy, very much white. But the merging seems really seamless as you look yesterday.
Well, I think what is so important about that is that by some definitions, the Obamas are an extremely traditional family. Part of what's interesting about the contour of their life is that President Obama especially came from what was a fairly fragmented, unstable family. I mean, he obviously had, his childhood was not a traumatic one, but it really could have been. I mean, his father really disappeared. And, also there was a tradition of multiple marriages at once.
Maybe that's the thing that binds him to Americans the
family.
Most. I mean, everybody's family is dysfunctional in America, you know?
Well, it's not so much dysfunctionality as you know, if you look at the fact that even his dad did not always end one marriage before starting a new one, that, you know, that was very untraditional and a little bit unstable for him growing up, and that he didn't have a father he could rely on. And, you know, Barack and Michelle Obama chose to create a very traditional family life for themselves. You know, if you look at the portrait of them with their little girls and also with Marian Robinson, Michelle's mother, living in the White House, you see that this is a family that, you know, it, on one level feels very familiar to Americans.
Right. One final thought on Michelle before we go. You know, someone was talking to me yesterday watching the inauguration that, you know, as a hospital administrator, she probably has forgotten more about healthcare policy than Hillary Clinton ever knew, which, you know, she's a real been in the swing of things, and yet she's taking a very traditional first lady role at this point.
I think that's absolutely right. I've done a lot of reporting on her hospital career, and you're right. She knows a lot about things that are very connected to the healthcare debate. And I'll give you just one example, which is that she's worked a lot on the issue of why people end up in the emergency room for primary care, even though that's not really the right place medically, and it's certainly not the right place cost-wise, because it ends up being a real tax on the hospital system and the public. She has, you know, so far sent out signals that she will not sort of directly engage in policy. She hasn't taken an office in the West wing. She hasn't joined any of the sort of policy working groups.
But certainly her knowledge
of the new administration. But I would be shocked if she did not put that knowledge to use somehow.
Well, it's certainly a resource in the new administration. Jody Kantor, thanks so much for joining us. New York Times reporter with a front page story on what the first family portrait looks like.
Thank you.
This is the meaning of our liberty and our creed, why men and women and children of every race and every faith can join in celebration across this magnificent mall, and why a man whose father less than 60 years ago might not have been served at a local restaurant can now stand before you to take a most sacred oath.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.